Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. In today's program, Bob Mix and I interview Thomas Kincaid as he introduces a trilogy of books that he's written. He's authored other books, but of course is best known for his paintings. Well, folks, many of you know Thomas Kincaid through his variety of paintings. He's called the Painter of Light. But I have just been informed in the last few weeks that he is now wanting to expand and become the Writer of Light. And he's written a book called Cape Light, which is a book about people and a book about faith.
Mm-hmm. It's a Berkeley book published by the Berkeley Publishing Company, which is a division of Penguin Putnam in New York. And again, I think all of us have been blessed by the paintings of Thomas Kincaid and his team. Thomas, welcome to Life Quest.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure to have you with us today.
I really tell stories through the paintings, so the book was simply an attempt to capture some of those stories in written form. And working with Catherine Spencer, I think we hit upon some interesting characters and a village for them to live in. And the idea is that these are people who face real life problems. They're not mm-hmm. perfect people, and yet they make the right choice through the foundation of faith. Mm.
And it's interesting that the people of faith that you're bringing, the characters that you're bringing out, are not always considered the most high society people.
Well, that's interesting. We had a basic characteristic of wanting to underline and enhance the lives of the reader by showing real people. And some of the characteristics that we identified was we wanted to have people who maybe didn't have every aspect of their life together, mm-hmm. maybe weren't the most successful individuals, but still, through God's help, they faced David. They're real people. And it was fun for me because the paintings really were the starting off point. I wrote a book a couple years ago called Light Posts for Living.
Mm-hmm.
And in that book, I identified 12 foundational values that I try to present through the paintings, things like home, family, faith, a selfless, giving heart, creativity, a sense of service to the community. These things come through in the book.
Now, the front of your book here has a beautiful painting of a lighthouse and a home, and of course it has the windows are reflecting the light, which is kind of your trademark there.
Started with the paintings, and we said, how can we translate those into written form in a new way, mm-hmm. Come up with characters and a place setting that would take those people into experiences that were romantic, mm-hmm. that were filled with beauty. And Cape Light itself, which is an imaginary New England village, is a place that's very beautiful. It sits on the ocean, and so we paint that picture in words.
Curious about how you actually began to put this together, Thomas, and that is, did you say, well, we need a character that does this, we need a character that reflects somebody I knew once that, you know, was like that? Talk to me about that, because, of course, I'm going to be writing a book.
Oh. Well, yeah, don't start it until you've really, really thought it through. I tell you, you run into problems as you go that are completely unforeseen. And one of the challenges we had, is this a Christian book or is it a mainstream book? We wanted to write a mainstream book,
uh-huh.
and I think people now more than ever, are desperate to get back to foundational values of home, community, faith, family. These are values that are universal, and so you have a whole unchurched, unsaved world out there
mm-hmm.
that would never pick up Billy Graham's latest inspirational book. They
right.
may not pick up a gospel music album, but maybe they'd pick up a romance story, mm-hmm. a novel full of characters who are real people, and maybe through seeing these people live out their faith day by day, it may change hearts out there in the world, and that was our goal.
And so your goal was really to try to reach the unchurched, the unchristian community, with some basic core Christian values and yet not be preaching at them.
That's exactly the same goal that I have with my paintings. You know, a painting goes into a home, and it's a messenger in that home. It's on the wall forever, becomes part of the culture of the home. And it can enforce chaos and despair, or it can reinforce hopefulness, peace, and God's love. I try to share God's love through the message of light that is within those paintings. Certainly has nothing to do with me.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing all that special about me or my life. But
mm-hmm.
But I do think people see God's hand in those paintings.
Talk to us about your own journey. Did you grow up in a Christian home?
I did. I grew up in a family of prayer. My mother and father were very different people, and as a result, their marriage ended when I was about 5 years old. So
mm-hmm.
I was in a single family home or a single parent home. Of course, back then they didn't call it that; they called it a broken home.
Right.
And in the little town I grew up in, I was in the fifth grade before I met another young boy who was from a broken home. So I felt very different. I felt in some ways frightened and alone as a child, because when the father's out of the home, it's difficult for the children. And so I faced that. But there was prayer in the home, and my mother was one of these Christians who sees the miraculous everywhere. She was always coming home and saying, God did a miracle today. I just got a notary fee. She was a notary public.
Uh-huh.
She said, I got a notary fee for $5. God did a miracle. Now we can have groceries for the week.
Yes, wow.
And so it was a very impoverished background, but it was a background of faith. I went off to a nice conservative little Christian college called Berkeley.
Right.
Just kidding there.
Yeah.
I received a full scholarship to the University of California, so I
now, was that because you were an artist? Is that on art or what?
Oh, no, I was pretty academic. I actually was a bit of a scholar in school and so forth, did well in school. And I wanted to complete my education. I really wanted to get a broad education, and I wasn't really in a strong position of faith at that point in my life. So I went to Berkeley. My mom doubled her prayer efforts, I believe, once I went off to Berkeley. And it was there that I really reached a crisis of faith. At about age 20, I realized that all this lifestyle diversity and all these people with their attitudes and upbringing and belief systems really didn't have a clue. They did not have a clue of the true meaning of life. They all could speak eloquently in words about the diversity of thought that was in the world, but none of them had faith. None of them had a driving motivation in their life to make the world a better place.
And the way that you could capture that difference is because your mother had modeled that solidness without all the material things.
Absolutely. And to single moms in the audience, and I know there's a lot of them out there, goodness, you are the beacon of light in that home. And just because you don't have the father image doesn't mean you can't be living in the miraculous before your kids, expressing a love for Jesus Christ that is so compelling that it will carry them through.
So you're in Berkeley, and you're making some choices and decisions about your home, your own basic value system, and then what happened?
Well, I walked down the aisle at a little kind of a revival meeting, a tent revival meeting that was happening. By that time, I'd moved to Southern California to go to art school, and I think I was 20 or 21 when I accepted Christ into my heart in a new way. At that point, my life changed. My art had been very self-absorbed. I would describe it as somewhat dark. I would describe it as full of pain and anger. And all of a sudden, a wellspring of joy came into my life, which happens typically to new believers. At least it should happen, because when your sins are forgiven, you have that personal relationship with Jesus. All of a sudden, everything changes. And I felt so completely renewed that it affected my art. I began to see my role not just as an artist who needed to express himself, my inner angst, my struggles, my personal pain, but instead I had this overflowing joy like a wellspring, and I wanted to put that on canvas and not just do it for my own good, but to serve others, to bless them.
Were you surprised at what you saw on the canvas?
I was extremely surprised. I began to see light emerge in the canvases, and light is more than a visual characteristic. It is an expression of God's love. It's so symbolic throughout the Bible. And Christ said we are to let our light shine before men, that they would see our good works and glorify our Father in heaven. So the end game for any believer, any person, any human, is to let your light shine and ultimately to reflect glory on God. In fact, any creative people that are out there, I hate to sound like a radical, but I would say that your primary mission field is the world itself. And, you know, we've been very effective in America in establishing this compact subculture called Christianity. And it has become an inbred self-serving subculture oftentimes. I don't say that critically. It's just as an encouragement, I would suggest musicians, writers, people of faith, don't just bring the message back to the home turf. Bring it out into the world that is dying, so desperately in need of hope and in need of light. And let the light shine out in the world where they need it.
And isn't that interesting? Because in the art world, there has always been this introspective, and as you said, you saw in your own art at first, kind of this expression of darkness and of anxiety and fear.
Well, that's true because of the nature of man. The soul of man is desperately dark. And without Christ as the central motivator within your creative process, you're going to express the flesh. Well, the flesh is a pretty grim thing, really. If you live with yourself long enough without the Lord, you begin to discover that life is pretty fleeting, and that there's a lot of pain that people suffer. And I think a lot of artists have been fed the myth, which says, look, your art is all about you. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if someone understands what you do, like what you do, enjoy it. All that matters is you. And I would challenge that notion and say your art really is a chance to touch another person and visualize things. And parents ask me how you can know if your child is meant to be an artist. Well, there's two things. One, the skill of drawing anyone can learn, just like playing the piano. But it's the passion for drawing. It's the passion for creating that I really look for, because the skills can be learned, but if that passion isn't there, it won't go anywhere. And, you know, if you have to force your kid to go take drawing lessons, then chances are it's not a good fit. For me, it was just an endless obsession. I know the Lord planted that in me somewhere deep, because from a very early age, I literally had this calling on my life,
mm-hmm.
Feeling almost as a priest might, or a man or woman of God who kind of feels like they're called to a certain mission field. I really sensed that. At that time, I had a nominal faith in God, but I just knew there was something different about me, that I had this calling. There was something that I was going to do that God had ordained. And as my life unfolded, I've really seen that it's something that was divinely ordered. It had nothing to do with our plans and our business skills or our, you know, marketing promotion skills or any of that. It had to do with God's hand wanting to bring light in a new way to many people. But really, growing up, art or music or sports or any number of things, reading, books, writing, creative activity of any sort, can be a handle for children to get them through. No matter how bad I felt, no matter what differences I might have perceived, I had my art. There was an inner sense of definition that God placed there to give me personal dignity and self-respect. Without that, I'm sure I would have been in despair as a child. I really had the art as my strong personal definition, and that got me through oftentimes.
Well, Thomas, I want to talk a little bit more about this. I'm intrigued as we look at not only your ability to paint with pictures, but with words. We're talking with Thomas Kincaid. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life.
Welcome back to Life Quest. Here's Bob and Dwight.
Well, Bob, as our listeners, if you've just tuned in, need to know, we're talking with Thomas Kincaid. He's known as the painter of light, but now he's expanding into becoming the writer of light.
Yeah.
He's created a book called Cape Light with Catherine Spencer, co-authoring there. And it's, Thomas, I understand it's the beginning. It's the first of at least a trilogy. It's some of the same characters. Is that right?
I want to cover the course of an entire year.
Oh, I see.
And tell the lives of these people as they go through the holidays.
Because you've spent quite a bit of time in the book kind of developing these characters.
Well, that's part of the process. We want people to kind of know these people. And in particular, you know, Jessica and Sam, the central characters, there's a love story component, as you know. There is a little class distinction issue going on, and she comes from a wealthy family, but yet he's the village handyman, and it kind of unfolds from there. But I really encourage people to read this book and share it with your kids. It's a book you could even let your teens read. It's adult issues, but in a wholesome, uplifting way, and I think it will inspire every person.
Now, this is a Berkeley publication. It is available at, what, Christian bookstores, general bookstores?
I think it's pretty much in every bookstore. It may or may not be in every Christian bookstore, but it is in the chain.
And Amazon.com.
Now, have you been inspired to paint more pictures because of the stories here that you're writing?
I've always kind of been very, I would say, very free-flowing in my creative approach. I don't necessarily schedule out paintings in advance or tie them to something unless, as God leads, I might get that inspiration. In the case of the book, there hasn't been a direct feedback, although I am longing this fall to get into New England again, where the book is based, and who knows, we may get some imaginary Cape Light.
Yeah, we get some things flowing from that. Now, I was in one gallery down in the Chattanooga, Tennessee area, and this person was explaining to me, they took us into this room and they played with these lights, and I was just intrigued by it. And then she started telling me that in every one of your pictures, there are certain little signatures that you have, little things that you have embedded in there. Could you talk to us about that?
Well, I'm just kind of corny, I guess. I put my family names of my kids in the paintings. I put a tribute to my wife in mm-hmm. every painting. I will hide the initial N. My wife's name is Nanette, and put a little number by the signature to tell you how many hidden N's are in the painting. And if you see a number, if you see an initial, if you see a mailbox name,
yes.
Chances are it ties to someone I know.
Thomas, whether it's art, whether it's writing, and no matter how successful you may be, there's going to be criticism. How do you deal as a Christian and as an artist and now an author with criticism?
Well, you just understand the source, and and then you just pray a brick on the people.
Exactly.
No, I spent a lot of time analyzing this before we even engaged in our public ministry, and my wife and I just said, "Hey, look, we're a team. There's going to be people who don't understand it, but I know my heart is right. I have a great desire to share broadly with the world." I was being interviewed yesterday by a big newspaper on the West Coast, and I don't know the faith of the man that interviewed me, mm-hmm. but he was asking these same kind of questions.
I see.
And I just said, you know, there is something foundational in my life that is so detached from the opinions of men. For every one criticism I get 1,000 people who write me letters that would bring tears to your eyes of mm-hmm. what paintings have meant in their lives. And it does upset me when art critics in particular have an arrogance that says, basically, that my work is irrelevant because it is not accepted by the New York modernist establishment.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say, well, irrelevant to whom? Yeah, to that little small subculture that we call modern art. Yes, my work is not in that tradition.
Mm-hmm.
But it is very relevant to the millions of people each year who bring it into their homes, take their hard-earned money, mm-hmm. and buy a Thomas Kincaid painting and bring God's love into that home.
And so now, as you're writing these books, in fact, these are going to be in the homes of people, and it won't be just a one read, because that's how books work.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's nice is it's an ongoing ministry. I do see the limitations of books, however, and of media. I worked in the movie business, and I'll tell you, to walk into the movie that I worked on, and 84 minutes later, it's over. And I thought, you know, it's very transitory, and books, too, are transitory. The stories hopefully retain in people's minds and get passed down, and other people read it. But ultimately, I think my greatest passion always will remain fine art paintings, because they're so much more permanent. They have a physicality to them, and
right.
they get passed down generation after generation.
Hmm.
Now, Thomas, one more question that I'm just intrigued about. You have a family. You have 4 precious girls. How do you balance the public and the private life of Thomas Kincaid?
Well, I'm just very passionate about my family. It's my kids are my hobby. We live what I would call a simpler times kind of life. I wrote a book called Simpler Times, and in my book, Light Post for Living, I talk about simplicity. And, in fact, John Trent and I are working on a book together right now called Strong Families, and I encourage you to look for that this fall, because in that we touch on a lot of these same concepts. John is an old friend, and he shares a lot of the values that, mm-hmm. that I try to speak of and share in my paintings. And I just am very guarded in my life. I fight the intrusions of the world into my daily existence. One thing, as an example, is that we don't have television in the home.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a choice we deliberately made when we had kids, because television is a thief of time, and there's so little time you have with your kids. And I wanted to have every moment available, and so evenings are spent with, we have reading, family game night, we have all sorts of different activities depending on the night of the week. But we're very involved in our kids' life. We live in a little village, and we are able to walk to town. We don't like to run around to malls on Sunday. We sort of sit by the pool or go down to the park or spend
right.
time, you know, in our yard pushing the kids on the swing. I mean, we like simpler things.
Great. You know, I just appreciate you taking the time to be with us. We've been talking with Thomas Kincaid, the painter of light. The book that we've been talking about today is at your local bookstore, Cape Light. It's titled, it's a novel by Thomas Kincaid and also Catherine Spencer, published by Berkeley Press and Berkeley Books out of New York. It's a good read. You will certainly enjoy it. Thank you so much.
I have a few minutes left in the program today. Let's talk. Ever since I was very young, books have been a part of my life. I remember being so proud of being discovered in the public library by a newspaper reporter for the Shreveport Times. She talked to me about reading, and of course I was delighted to find a picture of myself in the Sunday edition with the note that as a second grader, I had read 52 books. Now, granted, they weren't things like War and Peace or some book that had 500 to 1,000 pages, but they put me on a track of discovery and learning. Like today's author, Thomas Kincaid, there was no television in our home. In fact, it was many years after I left home that I had one in my own house. The consequence was a greater dependence on reading to entertain, to inform, and to challenge. Now, friends, today in the 21st century, we have so many ways of learning, don't we? Of being entertained, of communicating. Google has saved all of us countless hours of research. Kindle and like devices bring books to our lives in a new and intriguing way. The Christian world of books continues to expand. Bookstores, sites such as Amazon, provide nearly endless books on discipleship, reference works, theology, and prophecy in its best and, yes, in its wildest examinations. I confess I sometimes surmise that some authors have read no other books except those they wrote themselves. And I will add that along with this plethora of material, there comes a need for greater discernment. You see, no matter how helpful or insightful an author or a book might seem to be, the New Testament reminds us to always compare what is written with the Word of God, searching the Scriptures for the principles presented, and also making sure that our lives and our thoughts and our characters are uplifted and our minds are directed closer to our Lord. On LifeQuest, I want to present a variety of books and their authors. I'm sent many, many books by a variety of publishing houses and authors and book marketing people, and some books will clearly not be appropriate for this program. Others may have a few thoughts and reflect a Bible interpretation that I can't agree with. So the question is, I suppose, do I reject a book that is 95% uplifting because there is a small percentage I don't find agrees with my study? Well, I would hope that God's Spirit can give us the discernment that we can separate the wheat from the chaff, as the Bible says. I also would hope that we are not so weak in our beliefs that a sentence here or a paragraph there will somehow lead us astray. My father once said to me that if he bought a book that had one idea that was a positive challenge to his thinking, it was worth the price of the book. Well, I'd certainly appreciate your thoughts on this subject. I would also like to hear from you any suggestions regarding a book that you have read that would be a good subject material for LifeQuest. Tell your friends about this program. If they're not in an area that has a radio station which carries it, they can listen live at noon Fridays Eastern Time or 9 a.m. Pacific Time on their computers at www.lifetalk.net. In fact, podcasts of archived LifeQuest programs are available at that same site. Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net or write to LifeQuest at P.O. Box 33082, Knoxville, Tennessee 37930.